You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the podcast. This is Save the Marriage, and I am Lee Baucom, and we're here to help you work on saving your marriage, but we're here to do that in a certain way. We're not here just to focus on your relationship, but I'm also here to focus on another piece of the puzzle of what you bring into the relationship, and that's yourself. You see, I have a core belief that there are several pieces to the whole Save the Marriage puzzle. One piece is the relationship and understanding the relationship, but I also recognize that there is another element in that relationship, and that's you, what you bring to the relationship. What I often find is when a relationship is stuck, the individuals in the relationship are stuck. Even if you want to make a change, you can feel stuck. And so today I want to just take a few minutes to look at that question of how do you move from being stuck to unstuck? How do you move forward with that? But before we jump into that, I just want to do a couple of things to just give you some more resources, find some ways of getting there. And let me just tell you for a minute of why I'm doing the podcast. You see, a while back, I did a survey of people who were using my material, and I asked them, what would be useful? What would be the most useful thing you can have? And one of the quick responses was more audio, more ways for me to listen to this when I am on my way somewhere, when I'm busy out, when I'm running around, when I'm exercising. And so one day when I was out exercising and I was listening to some information, I always listen to books and podcasts, it occurred to me that that's exactly one way of addressing that. And so here we are with this podcast, but there's another piece to this podcast. You know, I'm talking to you, but I don't get to hear back from you. And so there are a couple of things that I want to offer. One is I would love to hear from you on some things that you might want me to cover during these podcasts. I've got lots that I can cover, but I would rather target it to what people are asking for that are actually listening. So I have an email account. It's podcast, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, at savethemarriage.com. That's podcast at savethemarriage.com. And if you email me, this is not a place for you to email me all about your relationship. Because it's not how I'm going to be using this. You can certainly do that, but it's not going to get you what you need. This is a way for me to get some ideas on topics to cover. So if you have a general questions about different things and even some specificity to them, please email me at podcast@savethemarriage.com. And what I mean by that is I'm not looking to answer and cover your specific situation. There would be way too much and it wouldn't pertain to all the listeners. But you know, if you've got some topic that you think that I should cover or some area maybe you've heard me talk about and you need more, if you would just email me that at podcast@savethemarriage.com, I'd be happy to look at that and consider it for a future piece. Another way to get that information to me is to call and leave me a message. Now, I am not answering this phone number, but you can leave me a voicemail. And what I'll be doing is taking that voicemail, the recording of that voicemail, and I'll be responding to that question. So recognize that if you do call the voicemail, unless you tell me otherwise, I will be using the audio of that question as the lead into my response. And the way you can call is 4HELP, 44132. That's the number 4, and then the word HELP, H-E-L-P, 44132. If you don't want to look up the initials for that, that's 443-574-4132. That's 443-574-4132, or 4HELP, 44132. So that's a good way of getting me some questions and letting me know what you're thinking, what's processing for you, and how we could be more helpful. And one other resource that I want to mention is my blog. There are lots of articles on my blog. If you are listening to this through iTunes or through Stitcher or one of the other places where you can get podcasts, then you might want to just jump on over to my blog and read more articles there. If you're listening to this from my blog, you're already there. but I want to give you a way of getting there quickly. It's simply SaveTheMarriageBlog.com. That's SaveTheMarriageBlog.com. That will get you right onto the page and get you lots of articles to read, and you can get started with that. So those are ways of getting more resources and getting your questions into this podcast, how we can help you. Okay, so let's turn our attention back to where we started with this, which is how to get unstuck. You see, I believe that there are some reasons that we do get stuck, and usually it's unresolved stuff. We end up being what I call anchored. It's like being attached to the old stories, the old self, the old stories, the old excuses. And I'm going to use that as a repetitive term, the old excuses. Now, we stay with that, those old understandings, because there's fear of stepping into something new. There's the comfort of the known, right? There's a comfort of thinking of that you understand yourself and your partner and those old stories and the old excuses you use. The problem is those old stories and old excuses don't serve you, and the old self needs to stretch and grow into something new. But the problem is we get something out of being anchored, out of being attached to those stories. Because when we have this place of going, gosh, something's got to change, we have the comfort, we have to leave the comfort of the known. You know, even if your relationship isn't working the way you want it to, you at least understand it and you say, okay, I know that. We all have that place where we want to understand and be able to predict and hold on to the known. The unknown is always a little scary for us. It may be exciting to step into it, but it's always a little scary too. We also have this fear of change. We all do. And so we like to avoid it. We avoid those places because we have this fear of change, and thinking of something different puts us into that fear of change. But there are two other pieces that are very important. One is that usually in that anchored place, we see ourselves as having no fault, or at least little fault, not as much fault. That somehow this isn't because we caused it. We all like to play the good guy role. And so we like to think that it's not our fault that things are the way they are. And I just want to relieve you right now to say, I'm not going to say it is your fault. That's not where I'm moving towards. But the fear of that, the fear of finding fault, keeps us in the known, which assigns blame somewhere else other than us. Also, there's no challenge, right? That's the thing about those old stories, is they don't challenge us to understand things differently. One time my dad was telling a story about me as a child, and the problem with it was fiction. It's how he remembered it, but it wasn't how it happened. I was a teenager, and I remember it very distinctly, and he told the story so many times that he had convinced himself of how it happened. And so one day I said, Dad, you know what? That story's really not true. Let me tell you the other piece of that. And so we talked it through, and what I realized is that we all do the same thing with stories. When we tell stories, we tell them so often that we drop the challenge of something new. And so one of the reasons that we say stuck is because we want to stay anchored to those old stories. We stay stuck because it feels safe. Not free, but safe. And we're always finding this place of balance between feeling stretched and feeling safe, which leads us to that big thing about fear, right? Fear is one of those pieces that we cannot get away from. It's unavoidable. It's so unavoidable, though, that we try to avoid the feeling of fear. It's not so much that we're avoiding fear, but the feeling of that. Right? We don't avoid something that is fearful. We avoid the feeling of being fearful. But what this does is it pulls us towards courageous action. And when I say courageous action, I mean doing something that moves you in the direction of your fear. And that you may be acting in spite of something, not because of something. It also is about taking responsibility, and I'm going to return to that in just a minute. Taking responsibility, please stay with me and not not blank out on that when you're saying, oh, he wants me to be responsible for everything, and hear it as he's trying to find fault with me. Responsibility is not the same. We're going to come back to that in just a minute. So stay with me if that starts to raise some red flags for you. I think you're going to understand it in just a minute. Now, what do we talk about with this courageous action? So I think back when my son, who is now 17, was a younger guy. He's almost 17. He was a younger kid, and I was the leader of his Cub Scout troop. And when we were talking, we were doing a craft, and I can't even remember what we were making because it really didn't matter. But the guys were talking about someone who had done something, and someone said, well, that was brave. And I said, what's the definition of brave? You know, what's courageous? When you do something courageous or bravely, what does that mean? And every boy said, when you don't have fear and you do something. And I said, you know, the interesting thing is, if you don't have fear, doing something is nothing. It's just acting. It's just moving forward in a way that feels comfortable to you. Courage is always rooted in acting with fear around you. Choosing to still act, even though something makes you fearful. So when we think about that, let's think about what limiting beliefs we carry with us. We all have beliefs that we carry around. And limiting beliefs are the ones that we have bought into that limit possibility and limit growth. My spouse can't change is a limiting belief. I can't change is a limiting belief. The world is always against you is a limiting belief. You will always get pooped upon, or however you want to phrase that. Nothing ever works out. Those are limiting beliefs. And you can almost always tell a limiting belief because it's almost always an absolute. Never and always. They're absolutes that point you to the fact that you are involved in a limiting belief. Limiting beliefs keep us from seeing the world as a larger place, somewhere that you can move beyond. I believe that everyone is capable of growth all the way to the time when they're being buried, or at least when they die. We are capable of growth. Ray Kroc, who is the founder of McDonald's, one of my favorite quotes was from him. He said that you are either green and growing or ripe and rotting. You're either growing into things or you're gone. You're not moving forward. But we sometimes believe that there is no more room for us to grow. That's a limiting belief. Things will never change in my relationship. That's a limiting belief. So now I want us to go back to that place about responsibility, because I want you to understand that responsibility is not the same as blame. Blame is when you decide that there is nothing that can be done and it leads you to be stuck. Responsibility is when you ask, what can I do? And it leads to possibility. So let's assume that you're in a house that's on fire. The house is burning around you. Your possessions are going up in flames. People are at risk. If you were to stand in that house and to say, whose fault is this? Who caused this? You're working from blame. But if you simply ask the question, what can I do to get myself out of this fire? What can I do to get my possessions out of this fire? What can I do to save the people who are here with me? You have now crossed over to responsibility, which is why I want you to hear when I said take responsibility, that's about courageous action. It is not about taking blame. Taking blame is saying, this is my fault. Taking responsibility is saying, what can I do given where we are? Do you hear that distinction? Can you understand that this is not about looking for who to point the finger at? It's looking at what action can I take to move me out of where I am, to move me to somewhere else. So when we look at this place of responsibility, we all have responsibility. What I say is you are 100% responsible for where you are and where you go. That is not to say you are at fault for where you are, but you're responsible to decide what you're going to do from this point. You have gotten here through actions of yourself and others. And now the question is, what are you going to do to move forward? People who are stuck are often looking for blame. They're looking for who's at fault. Because when you change it to, what can I do, suddenly you're unstuck. Suddenly there are lots of things that can happen within that. Maybe not exactly what you want to have happen, but lots of things that can happen. Which brings us to the question of control. Because one of the places that people find themselves most stuck is when they are trying to change something of which they have no control, rather than looking to change the things of which they do have control. And so stepping back for a minute, I'll simply ask a question, what do you control and what do you not control? And I'll tell you the differentiation, and it's in between you and other people. You do not have control over what other people do, of how they act, how they react, how they respond, how they are in the world. Whether they have good manners or bad manners, whether they have good ethics or bad ethics, whether they make good decisions or bad decisions, whether they take action or they don't take action, you have no control over that. In spite of what we often do as parents, we do not control our children, our spouse, our relatives, the people at work, anyone around us. We don't ultimately control unless they are playing the game where we control. But even then, we don't really. Right? They may act it out, but in the end, if you push them, you don't control. And so whenever we're trying to find what can I do, and we're saying, well, I've got to change this other person, you have just stepped into the blame game. You are now looking for fault, and you are not about your own responsibility for what can you do from where you are. You do have control over yourself and how you respond. How you choose to show up in life, how you choose to react to situations, how you choose to be in the world, you have control over. You may have to teach yourself to have better control, but it is your place to control. You can choose whether you're going to or not, but you do have control. So as you're looking at that, I want you to think about, am I looking for things where I have control? Is it about myself? Or I'm looking at things where I have no control. Is it about other people? In this case, your spouse. You have no control over whether your spouse will head out the door, whether your spouse will have an affair, whether your spouse will respond to your overtures for connection, whether your spouse will do anything you want your spouse to do. But you do have control over how you will respond with your spouse. How you will react to those situations, and that's where you want to work from, the place where you do have control. So then I want you to think about a term that I've really been wrestling with lately, and that's courageous compassion. Are you willing to take a risk to be compassionate to yourself, to your spouse, to the world around you? Now let's talk about what compassion is. Compassion, the meaning of the word compassion is to suffer with. Right now I'm working on, I also do a magazine, Thriveology Magazine, which is a newsstand magazine with Apple. So if you have an iPad, you can look at Thriveology Magazine, and I would invite you to. And right now I'm editing the issue on compassion. And we're coming at it from lots of different angles. But when I was looking up the root of compassion, it means to suffer with. But we have it as a broader context, to be in the emotional connection with those around us, to understand that people are doing the best they can where they are, for instance. That's a core belief of mine that I think is about being compassionate by seeing that someone is human and has their own struggles. And so when we say, oh, that person is human, my spouse is human and is struggling through their own stuff, and that when they do things, it may be that it hurts me, but it may not be because they mean to hurt me. It just happens that I'm in the way of that, because I really do believe that people do the best they can where they are. That's not that we are all at optimal performance, me, you, anyone else. There is always another place we can get better at. But we do the best we can. In all of my years of being a therapist, I never had someone who came into my office and said, you know what, I'm just not doing all I could. Just not trying. just not showing up. It may have been that they weren't showing up the way they should have, but they were doing the best they can from where they are. They were doing the best they could from where they were. And then we work to find a new place to be. So courageous compassion is risky because you have to be willing to let go of your own beliefs and your understandings and embrace the possibility that what you have attributed to someone else may not be true. That when you have said, that person is mean, that person means to hurt me, that person is angry, that you have to be open to the possibility of seeing it different. Why is that courageous? Because you have to risk letting go of those old stories. And whenever you're risking letting go of those old stories, it takes courage. It takes a willingness to take a risk. Why is it compassionate? Because you're seeing the other person through different lenses. You're seeing them through the possibility that they're not as bad as you said they are. Many times I talk with a spouse and they describe their spouse to me, and I wait for when that spouse comes in my office expecting to see someone with horns and a pointy tail coming through the door. And instead, the nice, kind person comes through my door who has been attributed to lots of things. And we as couples attribute to each other lots of good and bad things that are probably not true. And I would say that even more definitely, they're not true. But we assign that to the other person. One, because they've kind of created this place where we see the end result and we forget the process of how they might have gotten there. So, you know, if we've had a very disconnected relationship, to say, well, that person doesn't want to ever hear my feelings, negates the fact that the relationship has not been built on a place where feelings are safe to share. For instance, so there are lots of places where we have to step back and say, I'm going to risk letting go of that belief to understand you differently. And I'm going to understand you with compassion, to see you as a human with your own struggles and that you're doing the best you can. I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt of thinking that way. That's courageous compassion. And when we give courageous compassion, suddenly we find that stuck point beginning to melt, that there are new possibilities. Or open to new possibilities of understanding things. So how do you change a limiting belief? Remember, a limiting belief you're going to find is there because you're saying it's an absolute. Let's talk about a framework. It's the four C's of changing any limiting belief in your life, whether it's about your spouse or about your finances or about your job or anything else. These are four steps that will get you unstuck. It will help you change your limiting belief. The first one is to be conscious of that belief. Notice when you say, I am a failure, I can't do this, I can't change, my spouse can't change, my spouse doesn't love me, my spouse will never be who I need them to be, my marriage is in shambles and always will be, my marriage is like my parents, my job is horrible, my job doesn't nurture me, my finances are horrible and they'll never get better, I'll never be able to afford. You can add the list, and you hear those absolutes? There's no room for change. You have to be conscious of it. And then you have to challenge it. For instance, if I say, you know what, I can never grow and change. I can never learn. To challenge it is to look for the times when I have grown and changed and when I've learned. And there's always going to be, and I use that as an absolute, there's going to be some place where you can look to as a challenge to that belief and realize that there was a time when that didn't function. That belief wasn't so rock solid, that there was another possibility. So you make it conscious and then you challenge it. You go around looking for evidence that counteracts that belief. And then you change perspective and you embrace the possibility. So instead of saying, I can never learn that, to say, it's possible for me to learn that. I can learn that. I may not have an easy time doing it, but I can do it. It's not about having done it. It's about the possibility of doing it. So you change this perspective. Change perspective is number three, the third C. So make it conscious. Go looking for evidence to challenge it. Then change your perspective by saying, I am going to see it this way. I can grow. I can manage my finances. I can make my job something I want it to be. It may mean that you change jobs, but you can make it something you want to be. And then commit to the new belief. It's not enough just to find a place and state it, a place of new belief and state it. You have to commit to it. I am going to work to learn. I am going to work to make my job what I want it to be. I'm going to work to find a way of connecting with my spouse. So you make it conscious, then you challenge it, then you change the perspective to a new belief, and then you commit to that new belief. Conscious, challenge, change, commit. Those three C's will change any limiting belief. Those four C's will change any limiting belief that you have in your life. But when you find yourself resisting the change, that's when you have to ask the question, why do I hold on to this? And one of the places we often arrive at is that we are stuck on forgiveness. We're not ready to forgive, which is a misunderstanding of why we forgive. We have lots of beliefs about forgiveness, and I know that because people say, do I have to forgive my spouse? To which I say, no, you don't have to, but you probably ought to for your own sake. Do I have to forgive whoever hurt me in the past? You don't have to. You can certainly choose to carry that pain around with you, but it serves you no good, and it doesn't do anything to the other person. Forgiveness, as we've understood it, is somehow related to letting the other person off the hook or somehow doing something for the other person. It is not. It is for you. It's so you can move forward without holding on to that pain. But sometimes when we get to that place of forgiveness, we say, well, how do we do that? The first thing is we have to see that people respond to fears and scripts in their lives. That we all make bad choices because we run on this place that is often non-rational and often caught up in our own stuff. Back when I was studying family systems theory, one of the first things that occurred to me is the blamelessness that we all have from how we were raised. Because what often happens is that if you look at a lot of psychology, it often looks for the person to point the finger at, right? The mother's to blame, the parents are to blame, the family's to blame. It always looks for somewhere out there to blame. Failing to see that those parents had parents, that those families came from families, that beliefs have floated down from generations before. I want you to understand how that stacks up. Because I often have people say, well, you know, I learned this from my parents, and boy, they didn't parent me well. And they start blaming the parents, not realizing that the parents were doing the best they could as parents, coming from the families that they grew up in. And suddenly you see that it's that the world is a lot more blameless than we want it to be. Because it's easier to point to the enemy, the bad guy out there, than it is to struggle with the fact that we all are struggling to figure out how to be the best people we can be. We all come from a belief system. And so forgiveness means that we have to see some level of innocence in the other person and to see that that other person has a place they came from too and to see that they're doing the best they can and they're responding to the fears in their scripts. But let me make this perfectly clear. Forgiveness is not about reestablishing a connection with another person. Not necessarily. It may be. But forgiveness is saying, I understand that you are coming from your own place of pain. You may still opt to not have any relationship with them. When I was teaching a course on forgiveness, someone said, so you're saying I have to forgive everybody? And I responded, you don't have to forgive everybody, but I would say that for your own good, you ought to. It would be beneficial for you. And he said, what about this person who abused me as a child? To which I said, well, where's that person now? Well, that person was dead, but I'm not going to forgive them for that. And I said, so the person abused you and they continue to abuse you because you continue to stay focused on what they did to you, even though they are no longer around, so that you don't have to stay safe from them. You don't have to stay distant from them. They're gone, but you continue the abuse in your own mind. Why would you do that? And the person said, because I don't want anybody to ever hurt me again. To which I said, you can't stop that because you don't control that. But when somebody hurts you, you decide, do I need an appropriate distance from this person? So I gave them the example of Pope John Paul. Remember when the Pope was shot, almost killed? They caught the shooter, put him in jail. And what happened next? As soon as the Pope was capable, he went to visit the person who shot him and forgave him. He forgave him for his actions. Forgave the person who tried to kill him. But the next piece is very important. The Pope left the prison and left the prisoner in prison. In other words, he did not say, I forgive you, let's be friends. I forgive you, you're back on the street, go have at it. There were consequences to the behavior. Forgiveness is separate from consequences. That is a very important point to think about. So when I'm saying you got to forgive your spouse so that you don't have to carry it around, that doesn't mean you have to let him off the hook with no consequences. It just means you have to let go of the emotional drain that puts upon you and the anchor it creates into those old stories and old excuses and old self that makes you say, this is not my fault. This is not my issue. What I want you to shift from, and this is where you get unstuck, is to say, I am responsible for what happens from here. What will I do with that? How will I take on responsibility and make a shift in this? How will I change the limiting beliefs that are in my life to move forward? So if you're stuck, I want you for a moment to realize that you're stuck because you're anchored to the old stories. And you're anchored because you're fearful. And you're trying to avoid feeling that fear all over again. But there is a limiting belief that locks you in. And once you find that limiting belief, you can change it by making it conscious and challenging it and changing perspective and committing to the new belief. And then deciding that you're not going to hold on to it, that you're going to find forgiveness, even if it doesn't mean that you reestablish a connection, you're going to find forgiveness. And then you're going to say, what can I do from here? Those are the magic words that empower you to get unstuck. What can I do from here? And once you've gotten to the place where you can answer that question of what can I do from here, you are no longer stuck. You are full of potential and possibility, and that's the place where you can take action. So now you can't claim to not know how to get unstuck. The only question you have is, are you ready to get unstuck? Are you ready to take action? Now I'm going to ask you to take some actions. As we go through these podcasts, we're going to be going back and forth between how do you change your relationship and how do you change yourself? What actions do you need to take? What responsibilities do you need to take? Let me know. You can leave that as a comment on the blog. That would be a great place to do it. And if you're so inclined, let me know what you're thinking about the podcast. If you're listening to this on iTunes, please give us a rating. Let us know. Give us some feedback by rating us. And if you're on Stitcher, do the same thing. Let us know that this is making a difference and how it's making a difference. And then let us know how we can do more for you as you work to continue to change your life and also to save your marriage. This is Lee Balcom. And until the next episode, I wish you the best as you continue to work to save your marriage. Thank you for being with us.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.